I should just note that, as all of you or many of you probably know, Boris Groys was a colleague of Kabakov's and a philosopher with whom Kabakov delighted in discussing and forming and throwing around the ideas with which he worked in the 70s and now. And that Pavel Pevershtin was of a younger generation who also at that time and continuing engaged in that discussion. And I'm now going to introduce Matthew Jesse Jackson, who has taken his PhD on Kabakov and is going to take a teaching job, and who has engaged in these discussions with Kabakov from the end of the 90s to the beginning of the new millennium. Jesse Jackson, and then we're going to have a discussion with the audience.
Спасибо большое. Ну?
Should we move? Can you see the slides of us here?
What I'm going to say is going to be very американский and очень академический, but we'll see. Илья Кабаков does not consider his art to be avant-garde. I want to consider the artist's hesitation before this word. One must recall that Kabakov matured as an artist at Moscow's Surikov Institute in the 1950s, where he studied the classics of Western art and developed a lifelong enthusiasm for cultural institutions, demonstrated by his many installations dedicated to, let's see if I get right and left. Dedicated to museums, reading rooms, and libraries. Kabakov's art is not primarily concerned with the prototypically avant-garde categories of invention and newness, which we will have gathered already. Far more often, his art deals with the challenges of recuperation and restoration, as in this 1991 installation entitled Repairs, which you will see is the same work reappears over and over again, remote. It is said, I don't know, it's an anecdote, it's said that Walter Benjamin learned only one word of Russian during his stay in Moscow during the winter of 1926, and that word was, of course, remote. It is also a crucial word for Kabakov, because his art continually attempts to do something that is strange and hard to describe. It attempts to restore and repair the embattled narratives of the Western humanist tradition. However, this task of cultural repairs, which you could say a культурный ремонт, perhaps, cannot be achieved by simply repeating the gestures of earlier artists. Rather, Kabakov's art is dedicated to finding contemporary artistic languages that can renew the past's values in the present. This is an ambition that we see clearly in his most recent art, but I think it's present throughout his entire career. And I'd like to kind of try to do some historical background here. Hopefully this will be okay. Despite his lack of comfort with the concept of an avant-garde, the culture of the historical avant-garde in Moscow during the 1960s was important for Kabakov. He says that it's not that important, but I think he's wrong. Here we see publicity from an exhibition at the State Mayakovsky Museum, which was for some time located directly across the street from Kabakov's studio. Ironically, two of the works the artist's absolutely earliest three-dimensional pieces are entitled Cubes. You see that kubiki, that's on the right. And Composizia v konstruktivistikum stile, which is composition in a constructivist style. These two pieces relate directly to the legacy of the historical avant-garde, but precisely how is the question. Simply put, let's say that Cubes is Kabakov's form of cubism. The artist's smile is important. Cubes may be literally cubist, though, of course, this is not cubism. Likewise, composition in a constructivist style might be constructed, but it is not constructivist. Both works appear to be art objects, yet just as obviously, they are not only paintings or sculptures. Cubes and composition in a constructivist style are intentionally not quite right. Nittak. The colors are almost right, evoking yet abandoning the elegant simplicity. That is elegant simplicity. The elegant simplicity of Rodchenko's Pure Colors, Red, Yellow, Blue of 1921. The four rows of four cubes should describe a harmonious rationality, a latter-day 5 by 5 equals 25, or maybe even a calculated investigative system similar to Mathusin's color combinations of 1932. Instead, these assemblages accentuate contradictions. Synonyms are easy to find. The works are made somehow, anyhow, koyakak. They are average, sredny, or gray, seri. They summon a perfect pitch of avant-garde mediocrity, the visual equivalent of Mayakovsky sitting behind an office desk. The work is in a constructivist style, but it certainly would not please a constructivist. Indeed, what self-respecting constructivist would have anything but contempt for a constructivist style? And what would a cubist think of a cubism made of literal wooden blocks? With such works, Kabakov achieved a difficult and, I think, delicate task. He kept the avant-garde's aspirations alive in cultural memory, but he did not try to renew the avant-garde's projects, as Boris explained quite brilliantly. Instead, we see a spirit that continues throughout his work in installations such as the Palace of Projects, which you see on the left, which it invokes, but it emphatically does not repeat the gargantuan utopianism of Todd Tower. I think we see in the preceding themes brought together most powerfully in another work, and there we see the artist with Yuri Cooper. The images are a bit deformed, but we still see what's happening. It's a funny picture, too, so it's okay to laugh. This is a crucial large mixed media and enamel on masonite painting of 1971, and it's entitled Answers of the Experimental Group. It's divided into two slightly unequal portions. The work's left side offers the ostensible answers of an undefined experimental group, as two columns of responses discuss a painted stick and three objects, a nail, a hanger, and a toy train. The work is puzzling. It employs three-dimensional objects, but it is not a sculpture. Its mode of display places it within the genealogy of painting, yet it lacks a frame or a signature. Its dimensions make it very difficult to hang on the wall. The design aims to be hyper-Soviet, presenting a script similar to the writing on all public signs. Moreover, with its rough, uneven surfaces and bland colors, the board maintains no secure relationship to the community of art objects. I want to suggest that Kabakov's painting provides a paradigmatic example of the artist's larger project of Kulturni Remont. The picture manages to combine aspects of the preceding works in an object that responded directly to its immediate surroundings. The inquisitive experimental group in question brings to mind the labors of the working group of constructivists. Here you see the tricolor designs of Gustav Klutzis, and of course, the featureless white enamel expanse on the right side of the painting returns us to Milievich's suprematism. On the other hand, the written voices suggest other collectivities, the questionnaire, the apros, the form, the ankieta, the commissia, the communalta, as well as Dostoevsky's Bakhtinian polyphonic choruses. Much like the long lists that appear in Gogol's short stories, these three-dimensional objects have been selected arbitrarily, but they are not meaningless. The coat hanger actually invokes the fundamental dilemma of the unofficial artist, where can I hang my things, while the nail stands in as an indexical marker of the Soviet Union's quintessential symbol, the constructing hammer. The work also suggests Baudelaire's invocation of the painting of modern life as no invention speaks to modernity, like the steam engine. However, this is not the locomotive in Monet's Guerre Saint-Lazare. Instead, the definitive technological marvel of the 19th century has become a children's plaything. More than a mere immobilized toy, what we have here in the diminutive plastic train is an absurd concretization of the fate of Soviet modernity itself. Perhaps most intriguingly, the work suggests the theme and composition of Poussin's The Arcadian Shepherds. And as it happens, Poussin has been one of Kabakov's favorite artists since his school days. Both paintings invoke verbal riddles. According to Erwin Panofsky's famous interpretation, the central phrase, et in Arcadia ego, should be rendered in English as, even in Arcadia, there am I. Which, meaning that even in the ideal realm of Arcadia, there is death, symbolized by the inscription on the oblong tomb in the center. Likewise, in Kabakov's painting, a community of interpreters attempt to decipher four discrete elements, but rather than the elements of language, et in Arcadia ego, they contemplate elements of representation. What is more, both paintings pivot on repeated rectangular forms and a central painted stick and the pathos of interpretive confusion. However, in Kabakov's work, Poussin's Arcadian Shepherds, Poussin's Arcadian Shepherds have been replaced by a kitchen table collective gathered around a handful of enigmatic household objects. In this process, Answers of the Experimental Group offers the viewer a Soviet Arcadia where citizens of a beleaguered utopian community confront the poverty and inscrutability of their surroundings. Invoking the theme of Poussin's canvas, Answers of the Experimental Group announces, even in the USSR, there am I. However, in this case, the viewer is not surprised by the intrusion of death into Arcadia, but by the appearance of art in the Soviet Union. And in the end, Kabakov insists that the artist's role is not to be the avant-gardist who invents the new. Rather, like Poussin's perplexed shepherds, the artist must struggle to retrieve and translate the old, and this is how culture will be repaired. Thank you.